Welcome to Book It,
a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books. Book It is hosted by the Blue Manatee Literacy Project,
a nonprofit that operates an independent bookstore in Cincinnati, Ohio.
When you shop with Blue Manatee, you are giving back to the community. For every book purchased, BMLP donates a book to a child in need.
Book It is hosted by me, Michael Woodson.
And me, Jill Burkett-Ragacy.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, Jill.
How's it going?
Not too bad. It was a really hot weekend, a really humid Monday, and today is actually not too bad. I like gloomy days.
Yeah. I have not been outside yet today, so I find myself in a weird place about not being able to comment on the weather.
Sure. I only ever know because I'm the person who walks our dog first thing in the morning, and then Josh does the afternoon, so I can always like decide what my mood's going to be based off of how nice it is.
Nice. I have to tell you something before we get started today.
Perfect.
So I worked last Thursday and I decided just to like mix things up. It has been, you know, since March, since I like actually got dressed and put on makeup. And I went full out. I had on a skirt. I put on a nice shirt. I was wearing eyeliner and mascara. It's probably the best I've looked since quarantine started, let's be honest.
Yeah, you're feeling yourself.
I was. And I went to work and I did all my work things. And then we had this order that needed to be delivered. We're not really doing delivery anymore, but I said, yeah, I'll run it over. And after I made the delivery, I posted a picture of myself looking adorable on Instagram. And I commented about how I'd gotten dressed that day. And it was a good thing because when I made the delivery, only one of us was wearing any pants.
I can't believe this.
Yeah. The person came to the door wearing a washcloth on the bottom and a t-shirt on the top.
A washcloth?
A washcloth.
Like, that was it?
Yep.
Wow. I have never experienced anything like that.
It's definitely something I'm going to include when I write my memoir.
Oh, it's definitely fodder for the tell-all.
What are we talking about today?
We are talking celeb memoirs. You are much more, you're well-versed in this. You've read a lot more. You've read a fair amount of celebrity memoirs.
I had a hard time paring it down to the ones to talk about today. And I am embarrassed to say this isn't a thing I realized I even read. I was not aware that I had read this many or that I liked them so much until like yesterday.
Preparing for this. Yeah. I love that about you. And there's nothing there. You shouldn't be embarrassed about it.
No. Over the last couple of years, the bestsellers list has been like chock full of celebrity memoirs. And you've got everything from like super inspirational nature of like Michelle Obama's Becoming to like completely irreverent and funny memoirs like Lauren Graham. I mean, Prince has a posthumously published one. I mean, you don't even have to be alive. It's there's celebrity memoir for everyone.
Well, and that begs a certain question that I wanted to ask you about. Because you've read so many more than I have, and I've tended towards the ones that, like, I've read Michelle Obama's because everyone was talking about it, and it was a crossover sensation. Like, everybody was reading it. Mm-hmm. What, to you, is the difference between, like, a celebrity memoir or just, like, a public figure that who's writing a memoir? So I'm thinking, like, truly, like, an actor or a singer writing something versus someone in politics.
Yeah, it's... This is, I think, going to be an unpopular opinion.
Mm.
My expectation is really the same.
Oh, I love that.
I feel like you need to kind of get honest and air your dirty laundry in a memoir. It doesn't need to be like trashy and sensational.
Sure.
But if
you're signing up to write a memoir, Tell me something.
Yes. But also, nobody learns. We learn things through adversity and being challenged and having shitty experiences. Mm. I don't need to read a book about how you sat in an Adirondack chair at the beach sipping tropical drinks and you miraculously learned some life lesson. That's not how it works.
Right.
And I feel like when you just kind of skirt the surface or you give it a glossy veneer and you don't talk about the ugly underbelly, mm-hmm. it mutes your own point. And if you want to connect with people, you have to be real. And being real includes dirty laundry.
Especially if you're in a position where you've come to a place in your career where it makes sense for you to write a memoir, something about your life. You are in a position of power that suggests something that's hard for other people to reach. So it's easy to like see these people as like deities or untouchable in some way, but it's really important for them, I think, and for readers to recognize like, no, like an entire life usually came before this moment, mm-hmm. and here's what got me there, and here are the parts that really sucked, and here are the parts that I want to remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think to your point, yeah, I think that if you're choosing to write a memoir, I think it's totally fair to expect like secrets, you know, like that you're ready to reveal. And I think that when a memoir is less interesting to me is when I feel like when I haven't learned anything about the person or like anything about myself at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's really the answer of what I'm looking for in a memoir is I'm looking for like, what is your life experience? What have you learned mm-hmm. on your journey more than, you know, like what specific, well, I say that, but then, you know, I have talked extensively this spring about the Jessica Simpson biography. I feel like I need to stop talking about this book because I promise I do read other things. But I mean, my expectation in reading that book was 100%. I just wanted to know what was up with John Mayer and what that was like. From like a purely like nosy fly on the wall. And it did have that aspect to it. But I think the reason I enjoyed it was because it was more than that. So maybe sometimes I go into it even with an expectation of this is just going to be a guilty pleasure. But then that one ended up being a little bit more than that, which was a fun surprise.
But I also think that I'm interested in the conversation of the evolution of a memoir, because now I'm just thinking, I was trying to think back to like, what's the first memoir that I read? And this probably isn't true. I'm sure one came before it, but the first memoir I remember choosing to read was Kathy Griffin's from like 2008 or 2009.
Yeah.
It's called Official Book Club Selection, which I think is really funny because she wanted to be on Oprah's Official Book Club Selection, but she was never going to be, so she just named her book that. And it's very, like, standard, like, celeb memoir. And to your point, I just assumed it would be, like, I mean, Kathy Griffin's brand is gossip. So right. I expected celeb gossip. But it was so much more thoughtful than that. She talked about her divorce and how her ex-husband was stealing money from her left and right. How she's battled, like, eating disorders and body dysphoria for years. Mm-hmm. And so it just really surprised me, and the reviews reflect that as well. I think everybody was thinking it was going to be something that it wasn't. But now that I'm thinking about it, what is a memoir? Like, this is going to be a wild, I didn't think I was going to ask this, but is like The Diary of Anne Frank a modern day memoir?
I don't know.
Neither do I. Because if I'm thinking about it, that's probably the first book of nonfiction most people read, because it was like about someone's life. I don't mean like nonfiction in like a history book, but like,
right.
It was assigned to many of us. I grew up Jewish. It was like we read it. All of us read it. All of us Jews read it. I meant like my family. But that feels different because it was like she wrote it as her life was happening, truly like a diary. But there's nothing to compare it to, I don't think.
That's really interesting because I read over the weekend, I read Shonda Rhimes' Year of Yes. And at one point she talks about being on the journey and she references Anne Frank.
No way.
Yeah, because she says, you know, she was just kind of reflecting on her life and how she always says no to things. And she said she didn't realize it, but she was deeply unhappy. And then she was mad at herself and was like, what do I have to be upset about? I run Shondaland. I have Thursday night on ABC.
Yeah.
You know, you want to talk about people who can be upset about something. Anne Frank had something to be upset about. Malala has something to be upset about. Oh, Shonda Rhimes does not have something to be upset about.
This is her. She's saying that. We're not saying that Shonda Rhimes has something to be upset about.
Yes. No. Shonda Rhimes said that. And I just thought it was really interesting because I often feel that way. But this whole book was so, I realize I'm late to the party because this book, well, I bought it in paperback this week. So clearly it's been out a while, but this book was so good. And while I was reading it, I thought of you.
Of me?
I did. I thought of you.
Oh.
Can I read you a passage?
Please.
So you may have caught on, listeners, that Michael is a bit of an overthinker.
No.
With a tiny flair for drama. And I was reading this in A Year of Yes. Shonda Rhimes talks about being asked to be on Jimmy Kimmel, and she has this whole fear of speaking in public. And I just want to read this to you.
Please.
You can die from the hiccups. For real, I'm a fake doctor who writes fake medicine for TV, so I know stuff. And I am telling you, we killed Meredith's stepmother with hiccups, and that could happen to me. I could laugh until I hiccup. I could hiccup and die. I could die on live TV. Literally die. Do you want me to do that? Do you want me to make Jimmy Kimmel be the guy who kills a guest? I think not. You know what else they don't want to see? Shonda Rhimes spontaneously fierce not shooting out my face. Fierce not. All of these things could happen if I were to go on live TV. These are not at all good things. These are bad things. These are very bad things. You may think I'm exaggerating or trying to be funny. Does fierce not smell sound funny to you? Close your eyes and imagine it shooting out of your face in front of 12 million people. It's not funny. It's not funny at all. Okay, I would never have had fierce not, but I am the kind of person who would get fierce not. It would happen to me simply because it would be horrifying. This is how the universe treats me and teaches me and keeps me in line. I am the girl who splits her pants and does not notice the breeze. I'm the woman who forgets to cut the price tag off my dress and walks around with it stuck on my back so that not only can everyone see how much I paid for it, but also what size I am. Do you hear me? I flung a chicken bone across the room at a cocktail party, and while everyone stared at the chicken bone on their white carpet, I pretended the culprit was not me. True story. I can't do this.
That's all derives from being a guest on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes, being asked to be a guest on Jimmy Kimmel. And I was just laughing so hard. And Mark was like, what's so funny? And I was like, you know how you get in your own head sometimes and you make something into being like this huge thing. And it's like an overreaction and you're overthinking it and you're turning it into something else. And he was like, no, you never do that. And I was like, oh my God, I have to talk to Michael about this because this is like our shared quality. Yeah. And I thought of you immediately.
That storyline in Grey's Anatomy absolutely terrified me.
Of course it did.
I watched the first like 9.5 seasons of Grey's Anatomy because there's like they're on season like 37 and it's never gonna end. And they also are all vampires because none of them have aged since 2003 when it started. Yeah, so I am an overthinker. We're renaming this podcast to Michael Overthinks. No, but that's kind of like the thoughtfulness that and humor that is sometimes the only awarded us, given to us in the form of memoir.
Yeah.
I love Shonda Rhimes, and I actually love how much you like the Jessica Simpson book, and I really love hearing you say that your expectation for disregard, no matter who's writing it, your expectation is the same, and I think that's totally fair. And I read a book. I read Amy Poehler's Yes Please when it first came out, because I love Amy Poehler, and it was a waste of time because she. It was one thing I liked about her was the process of promoting it, because she talked frequently about how hard it was to write. Like she you never hear people say that. You see a book at the end of like on a shelf, and you all you see is the finished product. You don't see how difficult it was to write, and authors never talk about that. And I like that she was like, this was really hard. Writing a book is no joke. So that made me really interested in reading it. And then reading it, I was like, oh, this was really hard for you because it's not very good. And she would write like 2 pages, tell me nothing that I didn't already know about her. And then in interviews and in the book, she said, like, I don't really like people knowing about my shit. And I'm just like, okay, like, I'm not asking you to like tell me you killed a man. I'm just saying, like, offer me some reflection about like the person you are now and how you got there. It wasn't very good. It was like the memoir equivalent of like coffee mugs that say dance like nobody's watching.
Yeah, and I guess my response is, that's fine. You can 100% be a private person. Why did you cash the check to tell me about your life?
Exactly. If she had,
I didn't ask for that.
Me neither. I didn't think I needed it. But then you wrote it. So I was like, oh, great. Like, I'm going to like know a little bit more about what Amy Poehler believes in and all this stuff. And it was just nothing. And like other people wrote chapters in it. And I think she thought that was cute. Like Seth Meyers wrote a chapter. And I was just like, knowing how hard it was for her to write, I think she just didn't want to finish it. I don't know. I love Amy Poehler to this day. I think she's really funny and I love her projects. I just was really disappointed in her memoir.
I haven't read that one, but
yeah, I'd skip it.
Yeah, it doesn't. It bothers me when you read one and it's not. I don't know. I just feel like it needs to be worthy of my time. And totally. So you should share something from the path that you've walked, because you've asked me to spend $24.99 and spend some hours with you.
Especially, well, I think too, like, there's a lot of pushback from people when someone leaves, is fired from the White House, let's say, and then writes a tell-all about this person that they no longer support, but totally was a sycophant the entire time. I'm thinking like every single person has ever been fired or left Trump's White House and then writes a book about it as if we're supposed to be like, oh yes, like the truth is out. You're revealing secrets, but it's like you backed those up as you worked for this person. Like why now you're just trying to monetize on this. And I think that that's really fair criticism of like, you need to be the person that you're pretending to be when you write this memoir, like before it happens, like have the morals that you claim to have in revealing these things now.
So the one political memoir I have read recently and I actually enjoyed it was Who Thought This Was a Good Idea and Other Questions You Should Have Answers To When You Work in the White House. And it's by Alyssa Mastromacano. And she was the deputy chief of staff for President Obama. And it's full of like just interesting kind of behind the scenes stories. But it also has stories about what it's like being a woman in the White House and a woman in politics. And so that just feels different for me than like, I mean, the book we're not naming right now, the Michael Bolton.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Do you want to know why it's different? It's because one of them was a corrupt group of people who actively know they're corrupt, but are pretending they're not. And then the minute they're fired or let go, they release like truth bombs, but like they don't land because it's like you were upholding this corruption.
Right.
And then there's like the Barack Obama era that we all miss so much. They were like corrupt free and like scandal-free. There was no scandal with them. Yeah. So it's like, I'm really interested in the way that things worked then and the intricacies of working at the White House when it's working.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk politics. We're here to talk about celebrity memoirs and gossip. Yes. And I really do want to know more of your perspective. What are some really good ones that you've loved?
Do you want to talk about our shared obsession for Becoming?
Yeah. Every day, all day.
Yeah. We both love it.
This is maybe our fourth podcast episode where we've just talked about it.
I just love that whenever Michelle Obama like speaks or writes, you feel like she's your friend.
Mm.
Like every time I pick this book up and I read it, or like, I don't know, she appears on Sesame Street, or do you remember that episode of Stephen Colbert where they get in the tent and they talk about like reading or healthy food or something? Like, she just has this approachable quality where you like, yes, feel like she's your friend. And what I love about this book is she so consistently just strikes that tone, and she's relatable. I consistently find myself identifying with her, which is bonkers. But the thing that is currently really speaking to me in Becoming is when she talks about the labor divide in her marriage.
Yeah.
And I find that particularly compelling. And she talks about what it's like to be a feminist and believe in equality while living a life and being in a marriage that is just sort of inherently unequal. And it's a conversation that we have all the time at my house, because we are constantly striving to share the burden, only to kind of run smack into the wall of reality that there are just certain economic and political systems in place that make it a constant struggle. And it sucks.
Yeah.
And I need to hear someone in the political realm say, I hear you. I feel it too. It's deeply unfair. It's impacting me also. And this is bullshit.
And not just in like a skimming the surface way. Like, she's like, I hear you, and this is why I hear you, because this is what I experienced. And I think something that makes her so approachable and feel like your friend is that she came into her life as an adult not totally wanting it. Like, she didn't want to be in politics. She worked really hard to be the best version of whatever it was that she wanted to be. And I think slowly realized, oh, I also need to have a passion about something, at the same time as Barack Obama was like, I think I want to run for president of the United States. And then she's like, cool, I didn't want that for my life, but like, that's what we're doing. And I think you'd be great for this country. So like, how do I, to your point, I think like create a more tangible role for myself in the White House as not just being the first lady behind the president. Like, I want to make my own change.
I hate that saying, like, bloom in the pot you're planted in, or whatever that saying is. But it's just, you know, like, I don't know. A lot of times we make decisions in our lives and we find ourselves where our life is different than we thought, or it's different than we would have chosen. And we're kind of constantly navigating compromises. And I just like that she acknowledges that, because I feel like it's something we don't talk about a lot. And the way things work with childcare and pay and needing two incomes in the world we live in right now is that sometimes you find yourself making compromises that maybe you didn't intend to or didn't foresee. And it's not about blooming in the crappy pot you found yourself in. It's like, no, how are we going to navigate this in a way that's somewhat fair and gives both people room, and maybe we need a different pot. Like, I don't know. Yeah. The analogy just doesn't work for me at all. And I don't know. That's what I like about Michelle Obama, is it's like, I didn't sign up for this shit.
I like the way you put that, because it just made me reflect on like what little experience I have in the world and how I found myself in a situation right before I came to Blumanity where I was at a job that I really liked, and but it was, the company was going under, the writing was on the wall. So I was like, I need to get out of here before it's not my decision. And I went on to a different company as an editor for all of this. And it was basically like immediately a bait and switch. You promised me these things in the interview, and I guess I should have asked more, but I was seeing, like you said, I was seeing all of the, I kept saying in my head, like woulda, coulda, shoulda. And, I was miserable, and I was really disappointed in myself, because I was like, I felt like I had compromised my happiness without knowing it. There was a day where it was just so terrible. I went to my car and was just crying and called my mom, and she was like, just quit. And I was like, okay. And then I called my husband, and he was like, maybe don't. Like, let's think about this.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to put in your notice, sure, but like, don't, just quit. And I went back up to my desk, and just like, I got an email from the manager of Blue Manatee saying like, hey, we have this position open, would you be interested? And I got the job. But because I'd made such a bad decision, having switched to this job that I hated, I was a wreck for 2 weeks leading up to when I started at Blue Manatee, because I was like, am I making another mistake? Like, am I just going to be unhappy now? Should I have never left that first job? Like, I just feel like I've made all these mistakes, and I'm making all these compromises that I shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, it's turned into like my dream job. But I never thought about it that way in Michelle Obama's book, too, that she does navigate those compromises, and she's really honest about them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, you didn't learn that. You did not learn that lesson sitting in an Adirondack chair.
Right.
Sipping a tropical beverage.
Like, that would have been fine too, but that's not how life works.
Just not how it works.
Yeah. I wish I could like figure my whole life out that way, but like, it's gonna suck sometimes. And I think it's important to hear that from people who are at the top. You touched on Shonda Rhimes.
Yes, I will say, I mean, this is clearly this is a Shonda Rhimes love fest. The other thing I love about her that I can't move off of her book without mentioning, she talks about two things, both related to being a parent. One is the mommy wars. Mm. And I love her take on it, because she talks about how, you know, it's so much portrayed in the media of women judging women. But what it feels like on the inside is a women judging ourselves. And, you know, when you feel like you've let your work down or you've let your kids down, and you chalk up a big zero in the parenting column, and you shame yourself for not being able to do all the things at the same time. And then all of that accumulated shame that we're all walking around on becomes this other thing through the lens of, you know, patriarchy and so many other things. And I thought that was interesting. But more so than that, she has an entire chapter to tell the entire world that her life is possible because she has an amazing nanny. I love this woman. We don't ask men these questions, like, where are your children when you're at work? And how do you, like, we don't ask them that.
Right.
And she talks a lot about how when she was getting successful, that was the big question that everyone asked her, like, how do you do this? How do you do this? And she said, you know, she spent a certain amount of time just kind of giving the pat answer that everybody wants. And then she decided, no, this is ridiculous. I'm able to do this because I have a nanny, and I have family that lives nearby, and I have help raising my children. And also her nanny is literally named Jenny McCarthy. So it makes it all the more hilarious in the book, but she has a whole chapter about that. And I was just like, thank you. Thank you for some person just being like, this is not about whether or not I can do this on my own, because that's a bullshit expectation. But also, here's the person, and I'm going to name her, that makes this possible.
So wait, her nanny isn't Jenny McCarthy, but her nanny is Jenny McCarthy.
Jenny McCarthy, yes.
Oh, that sweet woman.
I know. This is, I mean, I know that I'm the last person to the Shonda Rhimes Year of Yes party, but if you, like me, had not read it, it's run and get it. It's so good.
I love hearing that.
Yeah. I'm thinking of another book that we have both read and a person that is beloved to us both, Lauren Graham.
Oh, yeah. I think I let my sister-in-law borrow it. So all I have here is the sleeve. Because if you borrow a book from me, you're sure shit not getting the sleeve because I don't trust you not to ruin it. Okay, overthinker. So like in this quarantine, people have like borrowed a lot of books from me. And I have just like these sleeves all over my office.
Did you like talking as fast as I can?
I think it's different in that I went into it knowing that it was going to be about like the business and her experience as an actress. So I wasn't like looking for, I don't know, like her childhood and like anything that got her to where she was. I was like reading it because I love Gilmore Girls and the revival was about to come out. And I wanted to hear her experience going into the revival specifically because I knew that the experience ending the show wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I'm nervous to say this to you. I did not read it in that moment. And I, reflecting back on what I'm about to say, I feel like I might have felt differently about it if I had read it in the same time you had read it.
Oh. You're always afraid to disagree with me. Please disagree with me.
Well, I didn't love it. I read this maybe a year ago. I was getting caught up on podcasts and I listened to the episode, The Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard, who is, of course, in Parenthood with Lauren.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And our friend Lauren. He mentioned having read it and they had a really interesting conversation. And I made some assumptions about parts of their conversation being relevant to the book, which turns out not to be the case.
Oh, I think that's fair, though.
Yeah. And they had a really kind of in-depth and conversation about her life. And so that was my expectation going into it. And then, of course, that's not what it is. So I was a little
disappointed.
And it felt a little bit like a Lauren Graham book report. Like, Lauren Graham did this. Then Lauren Graham did that. Then this happened to Lauren Graham. And then this happened. And I was like, right, but what do you think about that? Like, what?
Right.
Give me something like, okay, great. Totally. I hear the story. And there were a few things in there that I thought were really that where she did do that. Like when she tells the story about having to audition and show her butt.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about like what she learned from that. Mm-hmm. That has stood out in my mind because I felt like it was one of the few places where she actually talked about her feelings or something she learned from it, where the rest of it really felt detached for me.
I think that's fair. And I think that's actually maybe one of the reasons why I think memoir is such a broad definition or title for something. I think it's a broad title for something that has actually like a lot of definitions. Because when I want to read a memoir, I want to read something like Becoming. But if I want to read someone's perspective on the modern world, I would probably read a collection of essays or like a book called there's a collection of essays called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. And it's very like how you said, like book report style, where it's like each chapter, for lack of a better word, has a purpose. And by the end of that chapter, it's taught you a lesson. So, okay, now we're on to the next one. Talking as fast as I can feels a little bit of a hybrid between the two, where it's like not really about anything, but it's about my experiences, but they're going to be like succinct and in essay form, almost like speech form. Like she's like been asked to like talk at some fun gala and she's like, these are her speeches for them. But I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, like I had so much respect for her. You know, she talked about making room for women at the table and bringing women along with you as you are able to break through glass ceilings. And I thought it was a really interesting perspective, but she didn't take any time like reflecting on
for sure
on it. I don't know. That's fair. Wanted it to be more. The thing I do love about it, you guys can't see. I'm going to do it for Michael. I love these covers. Where,
what are they called? Face covers?
Like the face covers, where it's like is only half of a face, and then you can hold it up to your own and be the other half. And it's like all over social media. Like, it's my goal in life now to someone have to ask me to write a memoir. And totally. I'm going to be like, I will, but it can only be half a face because that's my life goal, apparently.
There's this one, it's not a memoir, but in thinking about this episode, it came to my mind. And it's an interesting situation where it's technically a biography, and the person who wrote it was commissioned by the person who the biography was about, because this person was in a position where, like, they were not allowed to say anything. So, when Princess Diana was in the midst of a lot of media attention, like, it was clear that she and Charles weren't, like, in love anymore, but they weren't allowed to get divorced. She hired a writer to write her biography, and in secret, he interviewed her, and there are hours and hours and hours of taped interview that he has for this biography, but she was not allowed to reveal that she had any part of it or that it was her idea to begin with, because she was still part of the royal family. The biography comes out. She's still alive at this point, and it's a hit. Like, people... It's a bestseller, but critics are really quick to say it's just a lot of garbage because they couldn't source Princess Diana in any of it. It's mm-hmm. It wasn't immediately taken very seriously. But for her, it was just, I think the royal family in reading it probably knew, like, these are true and only one person can do it, but there's no claim and she's not saying anything. They divorce. She's killed. And the person who wrote the biography was able to say finally, like, these are her words. Like, we sat down for a week and I interviewed her, and this is her story that she wanted to tell because you guys wanted to let her tell it. And there's a documentary that's based around the recordings of the interviews. The documentary watches like reading a memoir because it's her voice. Mm-hmm. She is telling me all the stories that will then be in the biography. It's done so well that up to the point in this documentary where she dies, I kept waiting for her to tell me about her death because she had been telling me everything else. Mm. And it was just an interesting, I want to go and read the biography now because I feel like it would read like a memoir.
Yeah.
I know we said we weren't going to talk about political memoirs, but literally we just talked about Michelle Obama. Well, Princess Diana is not political. Never mind.
Well, I mean, you know.
Could be.
She was out there, you know, hugging people with AIDS and, you know, going and talking about landmines. She wasn't not political.
Totally.
It's going to feel like a 180 degree turn. I have to tell you my current gold standard for celebrity memoir.
Okay.
It's Adam Rippon, Beautiful on the Outside.
Oh, I love him. I love him. Look at him.
I do too. I enjoyed him at the Olympics. I continue to enjoy him on Instagram and Twitter. And when we said we were doing celebrity memoirs, I had not read this book yet. I picked up a copy when I was at Book Expo last year and he was there.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. I got up and I skipped breakfast to go to his like morning panel to see him at Book Expo. So I had not read this, even though it's been in my to-be-read pile now for a year. I have to read you guys the text I sent Michael at some point over the weekend.
Perfect.
I'm on page 78, and I already know he blamed his skating for his parents' divorce, how he lost his virginity, and it involved a herpes joke. If you're a celeb and you're going to write a biography, this is what I want.
It's 78 pages in.
78 pages. He talked about, like, you know, understanding that he was gay and his first relationship with a man, which really wasn't a relationship, and sure. The whole thing and his parents' divorce. And you're like, we are in for a wild ride, Adam Rippon. We are on page 78.
He's someone who, like, I feel, jealous of, because, like, he clearly is, like, been given every single talent and skill in the world. Like, oh, he's an incredible skater. He's also an incredible wit and really honest, so people trust him. At the same time, I'm just, like, deeply sexually attracted to him. And I think it's because of those things.
I did not expect you to say that. That's amazing.
He just like
he's hot. I'll give it. Yeah, I'll ride that train with you.
Drips like confidence in.
He does.
Like his story. Like maybe he has his own insecurities. We all do, but he like seems very self-aware and in a way that is very attractive to me.
I totally get that. Yeah. I wrote down this line, which seems like a good fit for right now.
Great. Didn't know I was going to say that, by the way.
It's a quote from, again, early. I mean, this biography just like hits the ground running and keeps going. It was coming off of having this first sexual encounter and a little bit of separation from his mom and having some space. And he says, I had a supportive group of friends around me. I was out of the closet. I was no longer a virgin who couldn't drive. Take that, Cher Horowitz.
Oh, my God.
And I literally cackled. I mean,
he's speaking to us. We've spoken about how much we love Clueless on this podcast.
I know. It was so good. But it's like, I don't know. I just really appreciated it. He's really honest in it. He talks about his insecurities and he talks about, I was not familiar with his backstory about having not qualified for the Olympics and and then being injured. And so that piece was interesting. But more than that, he just really talks about his struggle and his relationship with both his parents, but especially with his mother and his relationships, one of which was, you know, kind of abusive. And I don't know. It was so good. And you feel like, kind of to your point about feeling like Princess Diana was narrating her own life, like you feel like you're out for coffee with Adam. Wow. And just shooting the breeze and he's telling you his life.
Which ultimately is like, maybe that's the biggest difference between a celebrity memoir and like a political memoir. Because I guess when I'm reading a celebrity memoir, I do want that vibe of a friend confiding in me, or like just like two friends who feel really comfortable around each other. And with like, okay, this isn't even a memoir. It's about such a, well, I guess it kind of is. I read What Happened by Hillary Clinton when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't need to feel like we were pals reading that. I didn't need to feel like we were like on the same like plane or anything. And I just wanted to hear her perspective about what literally happened. And then maybe that in that way, I was surprised by it because she does delve into her personal life more than I thought she would, because she's already done that so many times. But that is what I look for when I read like a Kathy Griffin book or an Adam Rippon book, you know?
Yeah. I totally get it.
So since we've been talking so much today about memoirs, I just had a question for you. And if you don't know the answer right away, that's fine, because I also don't know what mine is. Whoever it is in the world who hasn't written a memoir yet, whose memoir would you want to read?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Oh, I don't know.
Me neither, because my mind goes to a bunch of different places. It's like, okay, what celebrity would I be interested in their life or their professional life? What political figure would I want to read who hasn't already written a book? So many of them have. And I think like one person that actually popped into my head right away, and I think it's because I really admire her and I love the work she's done, is Ava DuVernay, who's the director of Selma and the adaptation of Wrinkle in Time, and she did the Netflix docuseries When They See Us. And she's just such a thoughtful person, and I think she would write a really interesting memoir coming from the perspective of a Black writer I'm sorry, Black director in Hollywood and writer, I guess. Recently, it came out that when Selma premiered in theaters, it was around the same time that Eric Garner was killed by police brutality. And he, one of his last words was, "I can't breathe." And the cast and crew of Selma wore t-shirts on the red carpet that said, "I can't breathe." And it recently came out that the Oscar voters basically told them, "You're stirring up too much controversy, so we're not going to nominate your movie for anything." It was nominated for Best Picture, and that was it. And I'm a movie buff. I love movies. When Selma came out, it was the best, in my opinion, the best movie of the year. Many critics agree with me. And when the nominations were announced, it just kept not getting nominated for anything. And I just couldn't believe it. Like, I was just like, this is clearly bias. Like, you cannot pretend it isn't. And how do you, like, how is a movie nominated for Best Picture, but then not also Best Director? Like, all of these things that make it a Best Picture. Mm-hmm. It just felt so obvious to me. And it bothered me so much. And it bothered me that they couldn't say anything. And now they're saying something. And I'm really glad that they are. So I'm interested in her perspective about that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. That would be, I wasn't aware of any of that. That sounds really like something I think lots of people would like to read about. Yeah. It reminds me of about a month ago, out of the blue, I don't know where this came from, Quentin, our 8-year-old, says, "I have a game I want to play at dinner." And we do this game at dinner where everybody draws a name out of a cup and you have to say something you appreciate about them. And so I was kind of expecting it to be like that. And we sat down and he said, "We're having people over for dinner and everybody gets to pick 4 people. They have to be alive. You can't pick anyone who's dead. And you can't pick anyone in our immediate family." So it's like you and 4 people you've invited over for dinner. Who do you pick?
Quentin.
I know, right? I was like, oh my gosh, why is my 8-year-old so deep and profound?
Yeah. And a stickler for rules. There's so many rules.
That is not surprising from Quentin at all. Right. But it was so hard. But it was such an interesting thing to discuss at dinner because I think he was, I'm struggling now to remember who he picked. He had picked Pikachu. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I wish I could remember. Pikachu and something from, it's a Super Mario person, but it's not like Mario or Luigi.
I'm not going to have any idea.
I can't remember. Some kind of Super Mario person, Pikachu, and then like his teacher, Mrs. Oakley.
Oh.
And, I forget who the other person was, but we all like talked about like who we would want to have dinner with. And it's kind of like a take on this same thing. Like, who do you kind of want to tuck in with and learn about and have a conversation with?
Yes. I think that innate interest doesn't start and stop with memoirs. Like, yeah, we want to learn about people who aren't us. And Quentin, as usual, is right.
Can't argue.
Let him know I said that. If you don't have an answer, that's fine.
I don't think I do. I'm afraid of naming someone who's already written a memoir.
I know. Maybe Ava DuVernay has written one and I'm just like an idiot.
Yeah, I don't know. I always struggle with these things because I'm like, oh, like I don't know, like 15 people spring to mind and
totally.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a hard one.
But if you are listening and you have a memoir that you highly recommend to us or to our customers or to other listeners, shoot us an email at bookit@bluemanatee.org. If you have someone who you would love to read their memoir who hasn't written one yet, also let us know. And we can't do anything to help you, but we're just curious about it. I'm so helpful as always.
We'll empathize with your desire to read a memoir that does not exist.
Yeah, our hearts go out to you. Well, this was fun, Jill. I actually feel like I need to read a lot of memoirs because, like, I reflect so much on Michelle Obama's memoir that they stick with me more than I think they do. I just don't gravitate towards them. And you've talked so much about Jessica Simpson's memoir that I'd have to read it.
I mailed it to my sister midway through the pandemic and it hasn't come back yet. Now, I did not retain the dust jacket. So, you know.
I mean, hey, like, you only have yourself to blame for that.
But maybe we can get her to mail it to you next.
Okay. I mean, I'll take the dust jacket off while I read it because I love you. I care about you.
All right. Shout out to my brother-in-law, Steven, who listens to every episode of the podcast. Leah needs to drop that Jessica Simpson memoir in the mail.
All right. Well, until next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast. If you're interested in learning more or donating to the Blue Manatee Literacy Project, you can find us online at bluemanatee.org. If you're in Cincinnati, come by and see us. We're located at 3094 Madison Road in Oakley.